of the darkness and into the light. It's the This Woman Knows podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of This Woman Knows. I hope you enjoyed the last episode with my dear friend, Mr. OG McClinton. We had a conversation talking about taking care of our mothers. And so today is part two of the Taking Care of Mama episode or series. And I have a very special guest. Her name is Dr. Charlotta Spencer. And I'll let me introduce her. She is a highly experienced healthcare professional with over 20 years of experience. And for the past 10 years, she has been a palliative care and hospice board certified nurse practitioner. During this time, she excelled in private practice and became the lead nurse practitioner in one of the largest private palliative care practices in Texas. Charlotta played a pivotal role in developing palliative care training initiatives for major health care systems in the state of Texas, correct? Is that correct? Yes. State of Texas.
Yes.
Her consultancy work during the COVID pandemic involved training care managers and social workers. As a published author, I didn't know that, as a published author and clinical assistant professor at Sam Houston State University, she shares her extensive palliative care expertise with aspiring nurses. So everybody, please help me welcome Dr. Charlotta Spencer. Welcome to the show, Charlotta.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I know that this subject is near and dear to your heart. So for everybody who has never heard the term palliative care, can you please explain to us or define what that is?
Absolutely. So palliative care is care of a patient who has a serious illness. And it's when they are still in that place, that little gray area where they are continuing to receive treatment for it. So when I think of that, I'll refer back to the conversation last time, is when your friend's mom was diagnosed with cancer. She was receiving care related to her disease. She had decided not to have chemotherapy, but say, for instance, you wanted that. So breast cancer, newly diagnosed patient. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. We would have palliative care come on board to do a couple of things. We know that this treatment is going to give us issues, right? Nausea, vomiting, dehydration, all the things that comes with taking this treatment. But we want to continue it because this is our goal. So what I do as a team, our team does, we have a holistic approach, mind, body, spirit. We take care of the patient. But the goal is to keep the patient on their path. If your path, Lisa says that I want to keep getting chemotherapy, but chemo is sending you to the hospital, that stops your treatment, right? So my goal is to treat those symptoms that keep you out of the hospital so you can stay on your path. You are still treating this chronic illness until you are unable to treat it. So that's one avenue of what we do in palliative medicine. But the biggest thing that's most important to me is advocating for our patients and getting our affairs in order. Because as we know, as Christians or whatever we have in our belief, we are here for a season and we will die. So we don't have to die uncomfortable in an ambulance and suffering. We need to be able to make sure that those things are in place. And that's what palliative care does. So I am board certified in palliative care and hospice because we come together. Because at that point, when you're unable to or have elected to stop that active treatment, then I turn my hat around and I help transition you to hospice support, where you continue your journey of just symptom management and no active treatment.
So you listened to or watched the podcast, the last episode, and yes, you sent me a very long note on the episode, which I did send to OG.
Okay.
I sent that to him. So can briefly explain, in your professional opinion, what happened and what should have happened to OG's mother?
So with OG's mom, you know, at the end, he kind of mentioned, he said, hey, she had already elected not to have treatment. And that's okay. That is perfectly fine. That was her wish. And the fact that she gave it to her family was the best part. That was step one. Mm-hmm. The second part was that then we had to that needed to be said to the team, and the team needed to listen. Mm-hmm. Because just because she didn't want the chemotherapy didn't mean that she didn't want the treatment for the other things. Because remember, cancer is a booger. It's going to go and it's going to spread and do things. She had kidney failure. She had all these things. She was having trouble breathing. those are the things that we needed to be taken care of to keep her here for as long as we could. And that did not sound like it happened in that scenario. Number two, I feel like they should have had conversation at the beginning and at the and all the way through as her change in her status. We're supposed to have conversations like advanced care planning or goals of care every time we had a change. And the biggest thing that hurt my heart was when he said mom was labeled as a troublemaker. And you said it too, as African-American women. That's, you know, once they give us a label in the hospital system, we're done for. And it's so frustrating to me as when I walk into a family and I'm consulted, they have a sense of, oh my, it's somebody that's going to listen to me because I look like them. And so for me, it's like listening. All they had to do was listen to his mom. She would have told them what was going on with her. Listen. And that was the biggest part, that it was a complete system failure. It was a complete failure from beginning. And she should not have died 5 hours before when she got home. Mom was in her dying process hours before, days before. We don't just die like that. There's a process. Kidneys shut down, things shut down. Mm-hmm. She was in her dying process and someone should have got there and we should have moved faster than we did. So that was just so heartbreaking to hear them have to watch their mother suffer day in and day out. And for them to believe that the hospital was the best place for her to be, because it's not.
Yeah. That's the thing we in that conversation, we said we thought, you know, that the healthcare system, that the doctors and the nurses were doing the best on behalf of our parents, because again, we don't know what we don't know. You know, we've got another situation right here going on and I smell a lawsuit because the care was just negligible in what happened in this new situation that we have going on. So in that conversation, we talk about the non-melanated experience of hospice and how that went. And so you and I had a conversation off air. Why is there such a huge difference between the hospice or end of life care that melanated people receive versus, and not all, I cannot say that every melanated person, every Black person has this kind of experience, but it seems a good number of us have this experience when it comes to end of life and caring for our loved ones and making sure that their last days are still quality days, because it should be quality days, even at the end of life, because I saw it in a non-melanated person, how they had this quality of care even up until the end. And then the support that the family received was incredible. I had never seen it, never heard it, didn't know that kind of thing existed. So can you share with us a little bit about that process and what can be done?
We should all receive the same care and hospice support. Hospice is a Medicare service that if you worked and worked in any job and you have any type of healthcare, Medicare pays for hospice. It is a service that is provided for us when a patient has elected or is no longer able to have curative care. It's a focus. It's not a focus of just give you pain medicine and you die. It's a focus on getting our affairs in order, right? Getting things in place and being with the people that we love and being comfortable until God or whoever you believe in calls you home. It's not supposed to happen in the last 5 hours of death. It's supposed to happen soon as you know that I'm no longer treating this illness and I have a illness that cannot be cured, or we're not working on that. We need to be focusing and transitioning. Why does it not happen for African Americans, for Black and Brown people? Because we're not educated on what it is. And we've had such mistrust in healthcare that we don't want, we're like, no, we go to church, right? We're church, we're community. We go to church and guess what we say? Hospice killed my mama. Girl, how did hospice kill your mama? Gave her morphine and she died. And then guess what? That gets around in the church and we are frightened of it, or that's what we see, or with OG. The hospice nurse, it hurt me to my heart when she said the hospice nurse was agitated. We knew it because she had to come out at night. And that right there, in my mind, you didn't give my mom the best care. You were agitated. I already assessed that. So those are the things that when we have these experiences, we're community. We're going to share them. And so that is why we don't get it. Lack of knowledge, number one. And let's be honest, they don't always treat us the way they should. But we deserve to have that education about what hospice is. Hospice is not at the last 5 hours. Hospice is at home. Hospice is in front of the window. Hospice is gumbo smelling and family around you. And hospice is when you walk out like your mom did you. Slightly slide out of this earth because I don't want my babies to see me die. That's hospice, right? Hospice is not mom get off the stretcher and then she died. No, mom railing with, mom was actively dying with OG's mom was on that stretcher. Oh, that broke my heart. She was. There was no way in hell that the morphine did not last her. She should have had medication. And teaching you guys, I'm giving her this medication to block the receptors. Share with us. We'll understand that. Block the receptors so that my brain doesn't feel like I'm suffering and I'm not gasping. But we have to educate our people so that we understand it. And that's what my passion is. When I go in, my goal, when I'm consulted on the family in the hospital setting, I go into the family and I say, hey, who are the key players in this team, right? Mom, if she's able to talk with me, I want her in the room. I'm not walking out. I don't believe that. I don't think it's fair that we don't share with the patient what's happening. So number one, if mom can hear what's going on, we're going to have mom in the room. And then whoever's taking care of her, who's the key players, needs to be in the room. And then I just listen. Tell me what's going on. And what we should do is, you guys are going to tell me. And then I will ask, hey, can I share with you? So it's ask, ask, tell, ask.
Yeah,
that's all we have to do. It's just the big thing is communication and having the time to do it. And most of our Black people don't know, our Black and Brown don't know that palliative care exists in the hospital setting. Yes. These conversations should be had. Yes, ma'am.
No idea.
And I know years that, I've been doing it.
See, and I know so for many of Black and Brown people, you know, our financial situations can be stretched, or, you know, it's paycheck to paycheck kind of living. And so, you know, we don't do that kind of far out planning because it's just about survival day to day, or, you know, I'll think about it when I get there kind of thing. And so so OG said something really important to that point. He said that he didn't know, or you have to know or understand what the insurance is and what's covered, what's not covered. And you need to kind of have those conversations early. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the money, there's a money piece that's attached to it as well that keeps a lot of families from having this conversation. Oh, it's another bill to have to talk about. So we'll just deal with it when we get there.
Right. And you're absolutely right. And oftentimes there are some hospices that can take patients, what we call pro bono. They can't do a lot of them because, again, they are a business and they have to right. keep things going. But there are companies that can say, hey, I'll take this patient. Mm. And we call it charity.
Yes.
Because it is. But that's relationships that the hospitals can have. And those are those conversations.
And I think if we can be educated on what kind of conversations, and I'm so glad for this podcast, and I hope that people will like it, share it, you know, talking about with their families, is that these conversations that we need to have, because, and I'll say it again, it's like, I love Jay-Z, how Jay-Z said it. Jay-Z said he wasn't scared. You know, he was born in the trap. You know, he's not scared to die because we're all born to do that. That is the most profound thing to me. It's like, we're all born. We're all born to die. And it's like, so it's nothing. There's such fear attached to death because yeah. I guess of the unknown, but it's a certainty, but it's still feared. And so I believe that we should. Okay. So I'm a control freak by nature. I like to control things. And so if it's the one, if this is something that I can control,
yes,
I'm a control.
Yes, honey. Yes.
I'm a
so
control.
I think that one of the biggest things that we need to do is have a conversation with family. sit down when you, we have it. And this is the crazy part. We actually talk about this, but we don't realize it, right? And so when I'll bring back to when I go in to talk to families, I'll say, Grandma was watching Young and the Restless. And when Jason was connected to that machine, and she said, don't you do that to me, baby. Guess what she just told you? Don't do that to her. She gave you her wishes. And guess what? The biggest thing and the best thing for us is to, for someone to give me their wishes. They, it's an honor that my grandmother gave me her wishes. And now I have to advocate for her. I'm going to be her voice and share her wishes. So number one, for us as African-American, Black and Brown, we got to talk about it. We go to church and we praise. Lord, no. But we got to know, and we say, oh, she went to see Jesus. She did. She going. We all going. So if we're going, let's prepare. We number one, we need to talk about it. Hey, mom has kidney disease. Dialysis. It's African-Americans. Dialysis is artificial life support. If we take away that dialysis, we will die. We are not the ones that are connected to this machine every day. That person is. And at some point when they say to you, I'm done, they may agree at that moment. Yeah, I think I want to do it. But when they decide they don't want to do it no more, we got to honor that wish. So we have a conversation up front before we, your kidneys are failing, Ms. Spencer. These are our options. Not to take not to undergo dialysis daily. Your body will fill up with toxins. You will have a, you will then go to sleep with a merciful death and you'll pass away. Number two, we can start dialysis. It's going to be about 5 hours, 3 to 5 hours, 3 days a week. You're going to be really tired the next day and have to recover. And then you do it all again. And you'll have to do this. Average life is 7 years, average life. We have got to be able to have those conversations up front. And then we have to let them, let that marinate on them if they can they can make that decision. If they say, I want to do dialysis, next step is okay. As things continue, we have to continue to have those conversations. And number two, when we decide, hey, this is what I want to do, Lisa, I want to have dialysis. I'm going to tell the person that can be my voice. You got to pick a person that is going to be strong enough to be your voice. We cannot be, it can't be the baby girl that lives with you, the baby girl that takes care of you, the caregiver that, or your favorite daughter that loves you so much. They can't be that person because they are going to think with their hearts. Even though they know what your wishes are, they're going to think with their hearts. And that's what we do.
We so, do. That happened to me. So when Nana was in the hospital, Nana was 92, 93 years old. Nana had been in the hospital for about a month with pneumonia and they had her on a breathing tube. And so I know Nana had a DNR in place. I know that Nana did not appreciate being on a breathing tube. I knew this. My mama couldn't let Nana go. So I remember going to the hospital to go see her and she had been non-responsive, you know, just in and out. And so I go to go see her and I'm like, hey, Nana, I'm here. She opened up her eyes and she looked at me and she started crying. I said, Nana, I got you. And I looked at her and I said, I got you. I went home and had a very stern conversation with my mother. Yes. And I said, Nana is ready to go. You have got to, because I couldn't sign. It's like, I wasn't authorized. And so I told my mom, and so my mom, they were two peas in a pod. And so it was hard for her. My mom was an only child. And so I understood it. I understood. It was like, you got to let her go. And so she gathered up enough courage. And, you know, that was on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We let Nana go and Nana took her flight. But it's like, I understand you can't...
It find can't be the person that you got to find the strong one that's going to be
the strong one. Yes.
I jokingly talk about my family and I have what we call, and we'll talk about advanced directives. This is my voice on paper. My directive says that I'll be 48 in a couple of days. And so for me, I have a pretty decent life. If I'm in a car accident and you have to resuscitate me and I'm going to come back to quality of life, which I think is seeing my daughter, playing with my dogs, those being able to eat my crawfish and my gumbo. That's quality of life for me. If I can come back from you doing what you're going to do to that, I want that. But if the doctors say to you, she's going to be connected to a breathing machine on a feeding tube in a facility, because that's another thing that does not talk about. When we're in the ICU with our family members, it's African Americans, and they offer you stuff, we're going to take it. It's an offer. I can keep her alive with this, this, and this. But you never told, they never tell you keeping her alive with all these things means she can't come home to you. So they should be saying to y'all, hey, yes, we can have dialysis. We can have dialysis, feeding tube, and breathing tube. But there's only five facilities in Texas that can take somebody with all three options. And you may be in Plano somewhere, your family member. They got to say those things to y'all, and they don't. So then what happens is we say, I want all of what you just said. I'm going to keep my family member alive. And they don't tell you guys all those things. So definitely, number one, the conversation needs to be had. Family, if nobody's talking to you, we need to ask for the physician in charge, period. I need to know who's in charge, because I need to know what's really happening and what are our options. Most importantly, having the conversation documented in what we call advanced directives or a living will. Let mama tell you what it is, have them things completed. Do they need to be notarized? No, that's an option. But two witnesses that are not involved in her care can actually make this a legal document. Something that we don't know. We're waiting. Every time I talk to family, yeah, we have documents. We're waiting to be notarized. Why? You don't need to. Go get the neighbors. They're going to witness somebody's signature, and it is now legal in the state of Texas. So definitely have your voice. Have the conversation. Choose a voice that's going to be able to advocate for you. Write it out on paper, because now they are no longer doing something to you. They are doing something for you. That is just the biggest piece. And then when we're in the hospital, ask those questions. When they offer you stuff, what does that look like in 5 years? What is that going to look like 6 months from now? That's going to make them say it. What is this going to look like long term? All you got to say. What is this going to look like long term? That's what they're going to have to tell you. Because being on that breathing tube for a long time, Grandma Nana had pneumonia recurring.
Yes, exactly. Yes, she did.
OG's mom had a resistant infection. Because yes. We're in facilities, things are going on. So these are things that come along with all this stuff that we need to be telling you about. And we don't know to ask for it, but that's why I'm here. Because I want us to ask. What does long-term look like?
So if we find ourselves in these situations, so we're in the hospital, do we ask for palliative care? Is there a representative? Who can we ask for? Somebody's got to be there that can help us know what we don't know. If we're going in blind and we just Absolutely. Don't know, who can we ask for?
You ask for palliative care.
The ask first for thing palliative
say,
care.
I know for a fact, because I've worked in these hospitals around here in Houston, we all have a palliative care, some component of it. Okay. Most palliative care, you know, ideally a palliative care comes with a physician, a nurse practitioner, a social worker, a chaplain. This is what our team consists of, right? Because we're taking care of you holistically. But oftentimes the hospitals don't have all of those pieces, but there is a piece of it somewhere. And I know St. Luke's, Moore Herman, Methodist, and HCA all have it.
Okay.
So you ask for that, and that's your advocate right there. And you tell them, I need help. I need somebody to help me figure this out.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's wonderful. And is that provided service? Is something that's added to a bill?
That is, palliative care is Medicare. Most of it, if you have Medicare, you can get that. Most insurances will pay a portion of it. But keep in mind also, If the service is there for in the hospital setting, the hospital has some tie to doing this. So you should not be receiving a bill. You should not receive a bill.
Okay.
That's in the hospital. Now, when you're going to community, and that's where I love the community, because that's where I get to see your home. I get to see where your bed's going to be. I get to see how you're living. Mm-hmm. That palliative care is 100% paid by Medicare too, but often it's a little different with insurance. Okay. So in the hospital, you're basically covered because that's a service they're bringing in majority of the time. Mm-hmm. But in the home setting, you have to kind of, they have to look a little deeper. As well with hospice services, hospice is paid 100% by Medicare, but some insurances have a coverage and some do not. So you just have to look into that.
So again, especially for Gen Xers like you and me, that are having to care for our elder parents, it sounds like we need to sit down and have a talk with the insurance people at some point and just really get clear on what's covered, what's not.
Yes, we have to do our due diligence. We really do. And, you know, there's some of, you know, we have to be honest, like in our communities, we're all not educated to do that.
Right.
But mom has Medicaid and Medicare. She can even get provider hours if she doesn't have a certain amount of money. So these are different things. And that's why the social worker in the hospital, the social worker on your palliative team, the social worker on OG's hospice team, those people are there to help us figure those things out.
Okay. I'll put up a list with these show notes, and it's like, ask for palliative care. These are the members of that team that you can ask for to help if you're in and you just don't, and you have no idea and you haven't had these conversations. And these are the people that can help walk you through this process if no one makes the recommendation for you.
Right. And we can also give them, I'll send you the links. I have them for you. Advanced directives here in Texas.
Yes. Yes.
Advanced, the medical power of attorney is your voice. Pick your voice that's going to be the loudest. Get that daughter that's going to, that one that everybody don't want around. That one. That's the one going to do it for you. She's going to be loud. Don't get the baby.
Don't get the baby. So what do you do because some of our parents don't want to talk about it. They do not want to have these conversations. They refuse. They are not going to make any plans. They're going to leave it for everybody to figure out once they're gone. What do you do in those situations? What can you do?
So in those situations,
it happens.
All the time. I typically talk to the patient's family about the person.
Okay.
You got to think about the person. So when OG talked about his mom, I heard, mama don't want this. That's what I heard it all up and through this. I heard it all there. But those are the conversations that we have to say now, would mom be happy doing this? Would mom be happy in that nursing home? Like I said to you before, my wishes are that if I can't do those things, I don't want to be here. My husband is my medical power of attorney, but my sister is there too, because Sheikah is going to ensure that I won't be put there. Larry's going to think it's hard.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in nursing home and visit me on Saturdays. I don't want that. So this is why you have to have a person that's going to be your voice. But think about the person in a whole, you know, with your mom. She was would being in those in that way give her joy?
Yeah.
Oh. So then that's when we have to pull the burden, you know, as family members and say, this would not be mama's life. Y'all know this.
Right.
And then there's some parents, and I have to share with you guys, it doesn't always work easy. There's some people that say, keep me alive by all means. And if you want that, I'm okay with that. But I need you to know what that looks like. And I have patients that are like, keep me alive regardless of what that means. And if that means a feeding tube, a breathing tube, dialysis, no legs, no arms, I don't care. I want to be here. Then you just let that happen, because we have to honor their wishes.
And that's their right. That is absolutely individual right. If that's what they choose.
We
if
don't
that's
do
what
it because it's what we want. Right. Right.
Got it. So we have talked about caring for others and things that we need to ask for when we're, and sometimes you're thrown into these situations. Sometimes you're thrown and it's, what do I do? And then other times, you know, if it's a chronic illness, you know, you kind of know how things are going to end. And so definitely have the conversation. So like I said, in the last show, it's like my sister and I, we knew where we were in mama's process. And so it's like, okay, let's go ahead and create this system. So when the time comes, it's like, we call it Operation Push Play. So push play, and the thing it just goes, right? And so all these things are already set up. And so that's a part of the pushing play program that all of us can put into action. And it's like, okay, this is when it all happens or things happen, push play and this thing automatically runs. And so you don't have to think so much because you've already done the pre-planning and the thinking for all the things. So that leads us into our own care,
right?
Making plans for ourselves, because sometimes we don't want to have those conversations. We don't want to think about our own end of life, but that's so important that we have to consider that for ourselves as well and make plans for it.
Absolutely. COVID changed the game. So in my career, I was taking care of majority patients with, middle age, Gen Xers, elderly patients, but COVID, I had 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 30-year-olds with 3 kids to have these conversations. And so COVID, or we have our 18-year-olds who are in these car accidents because they're texting and driving. It's uncomfortable for us to have the conversation, but it really is not uncomfortable for them. We got to bring it up. So talk to my daughter about it. You know, my daughter's 18. She's going away to college this Saturday. And so the thing is, like, she understands. I brought it to her earlier. I've always been in this space. And, if something happens to you, Jay, what do you want? I don't want to be in a hospital for the rest of my life. Straight up told me. And I'm like, okay, right. So we are able to verbally say, and they tell it to us. They can tell us, our elderly, ourselves. You know, given that it seems kind of scary when you give that to someone, but it's such a privilege for someone to love you enough to trust you with with that part of them. Like,
Now, does it have to be
way to honor them? I'm sorry. Now,
does that have to be written down, or is the verbal enough?
It's nice to have it written down.
Okay.
And it's a legal document, but the verbal, we would take the verbal because the verbal works.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, when the patient is no longer able to make decisions, whoever's the next of kin is going to step in place. Mm-hmm. And if she's verbally said to you, please allow me to die naturally and as gently as possible.
Yeah.
Then you can say, doctor, this is what we want to do, because you're making the decisions.
Gotcha. So how do we do that for ourselves?
How do we do it for ourselves? Number one, you find that you recognize how much you want, how far you want the medical team to go for you to keep you alive.
Yes.
How far do you want to, how much do you want, how much support, right? So you got to have that talk with yourself. Mm-hmm. Then you have to say, okay, which part of my family member is going to be the one to be my voice?
Yes.
Who is that? Who's going to be able to handle this stressor?
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And so, then number three. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Number three.
Then we can put it in writing. Have the conversation. So one of the things we do is, Lisa's going to tell her she designated her son, but she didn't tell her son that he was designated. So we sitting in a family room, and then some piece of paper come out and say, Junebug, you made a decision. Come on. And Junebug's like, well, what decision? Because nobody told. So we got to decide what we want,
mm-hmm.
how far we want the medical team to help us stay alive.
Yes.
And when is enough? Decide who we're going to have to be that voice, and then share the voice with them. Share
Absolutely.
It.
And then it also sounds like we should definitely have an insurance review. Because I know that there is, there's all kinds of insurance plans, end of life, extended care, there are all kinds of insurance. So if you have those, just have all come review. To the table, have that part, and know what you're playing with. Know the house money. Know what you're doing. Know what you're dealing with.
I have a young mom, and she'll be 65 next year. She's been working since she was 15, baby, and she knew in her life that at 65, she's going to get Medicare. She's going to retire. And I kept saying, Mom, I got to work till I'm 67. And we're real close in age, sister. I said, so why are you getting to retire? And she's like, because that's what and then we sat down and we did a review.
Yeah.
And guess who will be working at 67 with her daughter? My mom. See,
I know a young woman who will be 65. And she's, going through this process, and then Medicaid only paying like 40%, yes. All the things. And she's trying to navigate this and figure out what does all this mean and supplement insurance. So it can be confusing. And so who should we talk to get an understanding on our insurance, whether it's private, if it's Medicaid or something that we've bought, you know, private insurance, who do we need to talk to get this?
We need to talk to the horse's mouth, the insurance company.
Okay.
Take some time, put it aside. And grandma might not understand. So that's when our advocate comes in, mm-hmm. right? Grandma's going to say, baby, I want to know what this insurance is. Sit down with me today and let's take the time to call. We got to slow down and prepare. Yeah. We know we have to work and it's going to take some money out of our pockets, but take your lunch break mm-hmm. and prepare so that we can know what we're working with
right.
and be that place. If we're able to, Lisa, you know, our younger people now, we need to be able to prepare for death, right?
Yes.
So we need to be talking about having that supplemental insurance and having that that piece that might be a couple extra dollars on your insurance, but it's going to help you out.
Right. It can mean the difference between hospice at home or hospice having at a facility. It can mean having care, somebody come to the house.
Yes, it can mean that. And, you know, I want to touch really quickly, if you let me talk about what hospice truly provides, because I feel like that is a piece that we don't know. Hospice is a service that is provided to patients at the end of life when they are no longer able to aggressively treat a illness. And we're focusing on their comfort and quality of life for whatever time it is. It is a service. It is not a destination. So wherever home is for you is when that service comes to help you. The service comes with a physician. It comes with nursing service. It comes with chaplaincy. It comes with social work. Most of them have a bath aid. And at the beginning of that service, they come and they meet you and they greet you and they talk to you about what they provide. And then you guys set the tone of how often the people come in. Because what people don't understand is it's not 24/7 in home, but it is 24/7 telephonically. So in the middle of the night, if mom, they're going to teach you and educate the people that take care of her to help her. But if mom gets into trouble and you can't figure it out, you need to call them. Someone is available 24/7. And if they can't help you over the phone, they are to come to the home. So that's the 24/7 service. Sometimes we have patients at home and there's illness, those symptoms that we can't manage, and we call that crisis care. And then that's when someone is put into the home at the bedside 24/7 to help with that. So that's where hospice is. Hospice is not a destination, but we do have hospice hospitals, and some hospice companies have them. VITAS Hospice has one, Harbor Hospice has one, and these are facilities for short-term use. So they're beautiful, beautiful facilities. And what happens is you may have symptoms at home that we can't get them together. So we take you to that facility. You have a beautiful space for you and your family, and we get those symptoms managed. Some patients make it home because the goal is to be home and your smells and your love with your family. And then some patients don't, and they may die at those facilities. So definitely recognizing that it is not a 24/7 service, and that we should be honored to take care of our family members at that time. There's also personal care homes, but those are all cost money. And there's personal care homes that you can take your family member to because, again, we have to work. So as Black and Brown people, it's really hard for us because we have to continue to work. I like the way OG said that, you know, they sat down and they made this schedule. You come in on Thursday, you're going to be at Friday. That's what we should be doing. That's what we should be doing. But we got to do it early. We got to do it early.
Yeah.
And the only way we can do it early is if somebody's up front with you guys at the beginning.
That part. Charlotta, thank you so much.
Big conversation that can go on for 7 episodes. But what I want you to take from this, Lisa, to share with everybody is get our affairs in order early, yes. Have that conversation with ourselves, mm-hmm. then have that conversation, designate that person to be my voice, get my voice put out there. And then Lisa's going to also have the documents. I'll give you links for advanced directive, medical power of attorney, and then the out-of-hospital do not resuscitate form. Don't do mm-hmm. all that stuff to me, but making sure we have those things in place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how can people get in touch with you? Are you taking questions? Can people send you, how can they reach out?
Absolutely. So I guess I can send it to you. You can send me emails through my business. It's JTL, Journey Through Life Healthcare Services, JTL Healthcare Services @gmail.com. Awesome. And I can answer those questions. I'm also on Facebook just under my regular name. And I'm a person that helps everyone. So if you Facebook me, I'm going to help you. And also on Instagram, Dr. Spencer MP. So I'm here to support you guys. I don't want us to not have help, and I'm willing to help you if you need it.
Thank you so much, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode and all the good stuff that Dr. Charlotta has shared with us, and that you'll take it to heart. That is truly my hope and my desire, is that you take this conversation and then you have the heart, because some of these are going to be hard conversations. Mm-hmm. We are not saying that this is going to be easy, because some of our parents are stubborn. Some of us don't even want to talk about it ourselves, but they're called crucial conversations, and we need to learn how to have them. It's going to make for such a different experience when it comes to end of life. If we have these conversations now, then we don't have to have trauma all through our lives. And it's like, we can control this part. So if we can control, if the end of life doesn't have to be traumatic, because we can have this conversation, let's have the conversation and let's send our loved ones off in the best possible way. So again, Dr. Charlotta, thank you so much. If you have any questions, I will have her email listed below, and you can always just send us messages and we'll make sure to get those to her. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of This Woman Knows. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of This Woman Knows podcast. For show notes, blog posts, guest booking information, and sponsorship opportunities, visit us online at www.thiswomanknows.com today.